From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Wednesday, May 14th. I'm Jonathan Aull. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker has yet to announce whether he'll run for a third term next year. Amid rumors Pritzker might run for president in 2028, some national political experts question whether he should seek a third term as governor.
First of all, third terms are notoriously perilous. Things that can go wrong tend to go wrong in third terms.
More on Pritzker's political future coming up on The Gateway. And also, Paige Spears was recently released from Missouri's Farmington Correctional Center after 37 years behind bars. He says he appreciates the simplest things, like just blending in.
It makes me feel equal. You know, nobody is judging me or anything like that. Nobody is staring at me. You know, like, oh my God, this guy just got out of prison.
We'll learn more about Spears' story coming up on The Gateway after this news. Christopher Kit Bond, a former Missouri governor and U.S. senator who paved the way for the Republican Party's dominance of state politics, has died at 86. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum has more on Bond's immense political and policy legacy.
Bond served two non-consecutive terms as governor and four terms in the U.S. Senate. He was known both in Washington, D.C. and in Jefferson City for being highly collaborative, including with Democrats who controlled the Missouri General Assembly. During a 2015 episode of Politically Speaking, Bond said he was proud of his nationwide expansion of parents as teachers and his aggressive efforts to steer money to Missouri-based projects.
In Jefferson City, I felt I was part of the mainstream. And certainly in Washington, I was more mainstream than right-wing.
Bond is survived by his wife and son. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
The Missouri House yesterday voted to pass legislation allowing the state to help fund new facilities for the Kansas City Chiefs and Royals. But the bill was filibustered to a halt in the Senate last night, putting it in limbo. The goal of the legislation is to keep the two Kansas City teams in Missouri. Proponents say if the funding is necessary to ensure the state continues to benefit from the income and economic growth the teams bring in. Some members in both chambers objected to the plan since the House unexpectedly failed to pass part of the budget funding capital improvement projects last week. That means funding for projects like the construction of a new mental hospital was cut. No dollar amount for the state funding has been specified. The legislation says the state can't pay more than 50% of the cost of construction. Can cities, counties, or both levy a sales tax on recreational marijuana sold in municipalities? That's the question at the center of a case heard yesterday at the Missouri Supreme Court. St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Lippman reports.
Both cities and counties can ask their voters to approve an additional 3% sales tax on recreational pot. But attorneys for a dispensary in Florissant argue that they cannot both levy the tax on stores in incorporated areas. Eric Walter represented the dispensary at oral arguments. He says the definition of local government in the amendment authorizing adult-use marijuana makes a clear distinction between incorporated and unincorporated areas.
There's only supposed to be one local government, one boss, one master dictating outcomes and imposing the 3% tax.
St. Louis and St. Charles counties argue that city and county government overlap in plenty of areas and taxation of pot is no different. The court will rule at a later date. In Jefferson City, I'm Rachel Lippman, St. Louis Public Radio.
A lawsuit filed by a St. Louis resident against St. Louis Public Schools demands that money be returned to the district. This comes after an audit found alleged misuse of public funds by former district leadership. STLPR's Hiba Ahmed reports.
Neil Hogan is suing St. Louis Public Schools former superintendent Keisha Scarlett and former school board president Tony Cousins. Hogan is demanding that they pay the district back for allegedly misusing public funds. The lawsuit also names a communications firm which was awarded a contract that was not approved by the school board. Last year, a district audit found that nearly $200,000 worth of questionable charges were made on credit cards assigned to Scarlett and the superintendent's office. Scarlett has denied any wrongdoing. The lawsuit also calls for the district to recover the public funds. The district has since implemented a new credit card policy and has begun monthly budget meetings that are open to the public. I'm Hiba Ahmed, St. Louis Public Radio.
Even though Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker is being coy about his political future, there's a widening view in Springfield that he will seek a third term. But there's also a question about whether he should seek re-election if he's also eyeing a 2028 bid for the White House. Dave McKinney has more.
For much of the past year, Pritzker has played a cat-and-mouse game about whether he'd seek re-election in 2026. Consider last August. Pritzker was in a Loop Hotel ballroom, talking about his longevity in office with Illinois delegates to the Democratic National Convention.
It seems crazy, but it's true that when I serve out just the end of this second term, I will be the longest-serving Democratic governor in the history of Illinois.
9 months later, Pritzker is still noncommittal about seeking a third term. At one point last month, Pritzker even told reporters it was a possibility he might not run again. But at least one top ally, Illinois House Speaker Emanuel Chris Welch, believes the governor will seek a third term.
I can only go on what I see. And what I see is someone who's had a very successful two terms as governor and appears to look like he still enjoys the job. You know, so my sense, just from observing him, is that he's going to run for re-election as governor of Illinois.
But should Pritzker seek re-election? There's a growing sense the governor is leaning toward a 2028 presidential bid. He's been upping his national profile as an effective Democratic attack dog against Republican President Donald Trump. And as recently as last month, Pritzker refused to categorically rule out a White House run. But political strategist David Axelrod, who helped engineer Barack Obama's winning presidential campaigns, says Pritzker should think hard about seeking re-election if he's also thinking about the White House.
First of all, third terms are notoriously perilous. Things that can go wrong tend to go wrong in third terms.
Budgets could implode. An embarrassing gaffe or scandal could happen. Or there could be some unforeseen calamity to raise questions about a governor's leadership.
You know, if your attention is divided between running for president, which is a hellacious job in itself, and dealing with crises at home, that is a very difficult balance to strike.
Axelrod says if Pritzker genuinely harbors presidential ambitions, he would benefit more by traveling the country, interacting with voters, and listening than seeking re-election as governor.
It would enrich him as a candidate and give him a head start. So you have to balance the risks and rewards of each decision. And in my view, the risks of running again are greater than the possible rewards.
Pete Giangreco is another Democratic political strategist with extensive experience with winning presidential campaigns. Like Axelrod, Giangreco warns Pritzker may be putting himself and the state at a unique risk if, as a presidential candidate, he's bashing Trump. The president hasn't been shy about retaliating against his perceived enemies.
If you have a guy at 1600 Pennsylvania who wakes up every morning trying to figure out how to screw Illinois because the governor said something. To me, that's like a new dynamic that no one's ever seen before. You can do one or the other. You can govern or you can run for president.
Giangreco says the stakes are too high to do both and that the governor has amassed a strong record already that will play well nationally. But another Pritzker ally, Democratic Senate President Don Harmon, says he hopes Pritzker does appear again on Illinois' ballot next year.
I certainly hope he'll consider running for re-election. I know that there's work left to do. And if the nation calls after that, we can certainly find a way to have that conversation in Springfield.
Harmon believes Pritzker could handle being both a sitting governor and a presidential candidate if he opts for that route. The governor's campaign says he'll make his re-election decision known in the coming months. This is Dave McKinney.
That story comes to us from NPR station WBEZ in Chicago. According to the Missouri Department of Corrections, approximately 19,000 people are released from prison every year. Rebecca Smith brings us the story of one man's release from prison after 37 years.
At 8:51 a.m. on March 17th, Paige Spears stepped out the front door of the Farmington Correctional Center.
Thank God! Thank God! Free at last! Thank God!
For the first time in nearly 40 years, he was free.
First day of the rest of my life.
Spears had been locked up since the 1980s, when he was given a life sentence plus some for an armed robbery where no one was physically injured. And due to a clerical error, his sentence was actually listed at 1,001 years. leaving him trapped inside the Missouri Department of Corrections. This changed last December, when then-Governor Mike Parson commuted Spears' sentence to the parole board. Their job? Look at the person Spears had become, and the work he'd done in prison, such as working in hospice care and creating programming for other inmates, to determine if he deserved a second chance.
And I can honestly say that Paige actually left corrections better than when he found it.
That's Terry Vandergriff. She's the warden of Farmington Correctional Center and was one of the folks outside the prison congratulating Spears on his release.
He's been the backbone of many programs here, starting it up, helping mentor some of our guys, get them on the right track. And, you know, we kind of joke that we're going to feel his absence at this facility and those programs.
Vandergriff stood talking with Spears as a large white commuter van pulled up and out poured friends and family who'd driven down from St. Louis.
My heart.
Yes,
my heart.
Yes.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lord.
Hello. Long time coming.
Yeah.
For the first time in a long time, Spears and his mother, 88-year-old Betty Cummings, were able to embrace with no reservations.
What's up, brother? Come on over, brother.
For years, Spears has said his goal was to be released and take care of his mom. And he began to fulfill that promise right away, helping her back into the van so they could all head to a local catfish restaurant for their first family meal in years.
I'm excited for him being home and being home with me, helping me, because I need it. Mm-hmm.
At Catfish Katie's, the group of family and friends chatter excitedly and pick out what they want for lunch. But Spears just stares at the menu in front of him.
I am very overwhelmed. Variety of food, fish, chicken, shrimp. Oh my God. Wow.
He says it's the simplest things he's appreciating. A real fork and spoon, and no one monitoring him while he uses the bathroom.
It makes me feel equal. You know, nobody is judging me or anything like that. Nobody's staring at me, you know, like, oh my God, this guy just got out of prison.
Spears says he's excited to get back to life and put into practice the self-discovery and skills he gained in prison. It's been 7 weeks since Paige was released.
Yeah, I'm trying to get back in the groove of things, you know?
But adjustment hasn't been without its challenges. Spears, now 64 years old, hasn't been able to get a job yet or a driver's permit because once he was released, he found out that someone had been fraudulently using his identity while he'd been locked up.
They had to issue me a whole new social. Now I'm waiting on me to get my hard copy of a Social Security card and then I can kind of move forward my life.
So for now, he's doing what he can to stay busy and he's already started thinking about how to spin this challenge as a learning opportunity for all his friends still behind bars. I'm Rebecca Smith.
That story comes to us from member station KBIA in Columbia. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. We are a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. I'm Jonathan Aull, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.